Nehemiah chapter 4 is the opposition from without. And then Nehemiah chapter 5 talks about the opposition from within. And let's start by talking about Israel's opposition. And I've listed the three big opposers and everywhere you can find them in Nehemiah. So we're just going to kind of go through there. And you don't have to rush. I'm not going to take this off real quick. But first is Sanballat. We've already met him a little bit. Now, I don't know about you, but never met the man, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have liked him. And in chapter 2, verse 10, so I'm just going to flip through and read his record to you. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 10, we first come into contact with Sanballat. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, servants, heard this, it displeased them greatly that someone had come to seek the welfare of the people of Israel. So these are people who are enemies or who are against the people of Israel having their best interests taken care of. And then in verse 19 of chapter 2, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And then chapter 4, verse 1, which is where we're going to start today, we see them again. Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at Jews. Now what is to jeer? What's that? If you're jeering at someone, what are you doing? Making fun of, right? Mocking, making fun of, right? So, and then Tobiah, he's been with him. In verse 3 of chapter 4, Tobiah, the Ammonite, was beside him, and he said, yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. So they're being mocked. And then in verse 7 of chapter 4, but when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the wall of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry. So opposition is building, and it almost is directly proportional to the wall. As the wall grows higher, so does their opposition and their anger. And then in chapter 6, now when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, although no one up to that time, I had not set up the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together at Hakephirim in the plain of Ono. But they intended to do me harm. Now, if I'm correct, chapter 6 is the first time that Nehemiah refers to these folks as his enemy. They have opposed him before, but he doesn't refer to them as his enemy. And then the rest of those, we see how they try to do him bad. In chapter 6, and we won't get too far ahead, but I just want you to see that. But I want to show you who these folks are. So first, notice we're talking about Ammonites. And so a little history. Jeff, what we were talking about earlier, it's really important that if you're as a beginning student of the Bible, that you read the Old Testament, but particularly if you have to start somewhere, read the first five books, what the Jews call the Torah or the Law. Because that then gives you enough information to understand the prophets later. So if you're going to read the Old Testament, it's really important to start in Genesis and read those first five books. Don't skip around. So, no Ammonite or Moabite shall enter the assembly of the Lord, none of their descendants, even to the 10th generation, shall ever enter the assembly of the Lord. Why? Because they did not meet with you with food and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor of Mesopotamia to curse you. Remember the story? Nevertheless, the Lord your God was not willing to listen to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you. because the Lord your God loves you. You shall never seek their peace or their prosperity all your days. Now that's a very important sentence. This is a word from the Lord to the people of Israel. They are to always be against the Ammonites and the Moabites. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we get going today. But Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 3 through 6. Now, that's of the Ammonites and the Moabites. God goes on in this passage to say, "You shall not detest an Edomite, for he is your brother." Now, who's the Edomite? Why is he their brother? People of Edom are who? Descendants of Esau. So Esau is the brother of Jacob, who became, name changed, Israel. So you shall not detest an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not detest an Egyptian, because you were an alien in his land. The sons of the third generation who are born to them may enter the assembly of the Lord. So an Ammonite, a Moabite, to the 10th generation can't come before the Lord. But an Egyptian or an Edomite, a descendant of Esau, can, after the third generation. And there is no similar prescription here about never having peace or taking light of them, as we see there. You shall never seek their peace or their prosperity all your days applies to the Ammonite and the Moabite, but not to the Egyptian or to the Edomite. Israel today is at peace with what nation? Egypt. The only Arab nation that they have a peace treaty with is Egypt. So a little biblical prophecy here, a little background. Okay?
Is the generation 20 or 40 years?
20, yeah. But that kind of, I mean, that's the general rule, but for example, it's not necessarily true, because my granddaddy Smith was born in 1888. So between me being born in the 60s, that's more than two generations. Now, Arabia, and I want you to get this because this has a lot of information for us for future stuff that we're going to study. Do you know where Arabia is? You can look in the back of your Bible. You've got Red Sea, that is the break. You have Egypt, and then the Red Sea, and then a landmass of Sinai, and then the Persian Gulf, and you've got the Arabia. Arabia, Saudi Arabia today, okay, where all the oil is. Well, Arabia, that big section, is divided into three parts. Arabia Felix, or Happy Arabia, because of its fertility. And this is the part that the Arabs call Yemen today. And so it's the very bottom of Arabia. And it lies between the Red Sea on one side and the Persian Gulf on the other. The Red Sea empties out into the Persian Gulf. Then there's the Arabia Deserta, or the Great Wilderness. And this name is derived because that's what the nomadic tribes call it. You ever heard of the Bedouin, a Bedouin tribesman? Well, this comes from the word Bedouin, which is the Aramaic term for great wilderness. So the Bedouin tribesmen are the ones who live out there in the desert.
The Bedouins,
they're still nomadic. Yes, still nomadic. Probably they, if you wanted to understand Abraham and his culture today, the best way to do that would to be go on safari and spend some time with the Bedouin. Because their lifestyle in the Arabian desert is the closest to what we find described in Genesis of Abraham. How he travels around from place to place, he's got sheep. And if you were out in this desert, you would want to be with them because they're about the only way that you'd get out alive. They actually know how to live there. And it would kill the rest of us. So you've got the Yemen, the southern part, which is the fertile area, the Happy Arabia, the Great Wilderness, and then Arabia Petera, the Rocky Arabia, and this is a mountainous area, and this is in the northwest portion of the country. And this is where we find the Mount Horeb, the mountains of the Old Testament. Okay. Now, so I gave you those are the old classical terms. Now, modern geographers would divide it into Arabia proper, and then Northern Arabia, the desert, and Western Arabia, which would include the peninsula of Sinai. Now, here's why I want you to know this. Arabia, the Sinai area, was originally inhabited by a group of people called the Horites, Genesis 14:6. We've been talking about Sanballat the Horite. You don't hear much about them, really, and this is where you find out about those guys. And this is why, Jeff, I told you what I did about reading the Old Testament, you know, those books first. Genesis sets you up really for everything else. I don't know if any of you are guilty of this. My grandmother used to start with her firstborn child and name all her 10 children, then get to the grandkids, of which I was the first, before she could get my name out. You do that? Yeah. I mean, I could give you the list. Bah, 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 bah. I just sat there waiting, because where's she stopping? Because sometimes she'd stop at Billy Ray, which was her youngest son, and wouldn't go, Rita Warner. Sometimes she'd keep going, as I'd had to wait and listen, because, and I understand that. But God, as He refers to people in the Old Testament through the prophets, often He will be calling them by the first one of them. So, Sanballat, the Horite, it's important that we understand that where he comes from. And Genesis 14:6, let's see if I can pull it out here real quick, didn't mark it. And the Horites in their hill country of Seir, as far as El Paran, on the border of the wilderness. So we're talking here about Arabia, the wilderness. These people lived in that area. So they've come over to Jerusalem because they've got a bad deal. The people of Israel are taken out, and so all the people from around them come in. And so all they had to do is cross the sea to do so. Now, Arabia appears in Genesis 10. So let's go back and look at that. And I wanted to spend some time today talking about the origins of these people, because I think sometimes this will help you understand your newspaper better today. These are the generations of the sons of Noah: Shem, Ham, and Japheth, sons who were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth: Gomer, Magog, Media, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. The sons of Gomer, and he goes through that list. Now those people, if you read Ezekiel, those are the folks who are in the north. We would call Gog, Magog, Meshech, and Tubal. Those are ancient names for the folks we call today Russians. Okay? The sons of Ham: Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. Well, so the people of Egypt, the people of Cana, the Canaanites, Cush, those are folks down in Africa, okay? So keep going now. Cana fathered Sidon, the firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Girgashites. I'm in chapter 6, verse 16 now. The Hivites, the Akites, the Sinites, the Arvadites, the Zemarites, the Hamathites. Afterward, the clans of the Canaanites dispersed, and he starts listing them all. Then Shem, to Shem, also father of the children of Eber, the elder brother of Japheth, children were born, the sons of Shem, and he's going to list them. Elam, Asher, Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram, the sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gethar, and Mash. Arpachshad, father of Shelah, and Shelah, father of Eber. And he goes on to Peleg, and he keeps going down through these lists. And this is where we begin to see some names that you're going to see more of. So all these folks, and he keeps listing, and then the Tower of Babel, chapter 11, that's in Iraq, Babylon. That's where that Babel, where it comes from. So this is where all these folks come from. Now, Abraham, where does he come from? He's one of Shem's descendants. Sir? Right. Which is in today what we would call modern Arabia. Somewhere in that area he comes. Okay? Yes. Now, the Israelites are going to wander for 40 years in Arabia. Solomon's going to do commerce with the people in Arabia. Arabians are present in the New Testament at Pentecost. Paul, when he gets called into the ministry of the New Testament, he goes to seminary for 3 years in Arabia, the deserts of Arabia. So it's referred to by the prophets. Now, so Sanballat, the governor of Samaria, the area of Palestine, which we today call the West Bank. So as you see, you get to see in Nehemiah chapter 4, the very same people that are going to be opposing Israel then are the same folks that are opposing them today. We call them today Palestinians who occupy the West Bank. Sanballat and the Horites are part of that. Okay? Tobiah is a representative of the Ammonites, which we call today the country of Jordan. Now, if you're a student of history, there is no such thing, and this is highly politically incorrect, what I'm fixing to say. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. Well, they are Arabs, but there's no such thing. Palestinians are an artificial designation that has been created to oppose Israel. In 1948, when Israel was created, that land that is now Israel belonged to the Kingdom of Jordan. It was called at the time Transjordan. The Jordanians didn't want the people, so they became refugees. And the Jordanians would not let them call them Jordanian refugees because that looked bad. So they came up with this artificial designation because they were in the land of Palestine. There were Jordanian refugees in the land of Palestine, so they called them Palestinian. Okay? That's highly politically incorrect. Because, you know, the Palestinians are supposed to have lived there all. I mean, but to believe that, you have to know no history. Which, you know, about 95% of the people in America know no history, so it's propagated. Now, in chapter 4, verse 7, we learn that this coalition includes Arabs and the men of Ashdod. Today, Ashdod is part of the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip, you still know about it. Gaza, the day of the Old Testament, is the land of the Philistines. The Philistines have always been against God's people. So when you look at Israel, and you and I talk about in our terms today a Palestinian nation wanting to have room in Israel, well, they're not really a people. And they behave that way, if you notice. Now, this last word, Arab, let's see, where did I put that? Got to go find my notes here. Yeah, here we go. The Arabs, who are they? Well, it's a variety of tribes of different lineages. We need to talk about, when we talk about an Arab, we need to talk about Ishmaelites. So who are the Ishmaelites? Abraham had two sons, Ishmael. Okay, Ishmael is a All his descendants would be Arab. Then you've got Arabians, which would be all those folks I kept reading about, Shem's descendants that actually lived there. Then you've got this term, Edomians, sometimes called Edomites. They are the descendants. These are two ways of saying the same thing, of Esau. Remember, God says, Esau have I hated, and Jacob have I loved. So they're part of the Arabs. The Horites, who we just talked about, Sanballat represents the people from that border region in Arabia. All these groups are lumped together and called Arab. Mostly, not all. This is something people don't really understand. There is a pretty strong Coptic Christian community in Egypt. And we say that Egypt is an Arab country, but that's really not true. Because as you see the designation, God holds a different place for an Egyptian than he does an Arab. 10% of the Egyptian population are Coptic Christians. And one of the strongest places in, I'm looking at the map over there, North Africa, used to all be Christian. Have you heard of the theologian Augustine? Well, he lived in North Africa. Some of the early Christian writers, we call the early church fathers, they almost all of them lived in what's today North Africa. But the conversion of North Africa to Christianity didn't stand the Muslim invasion that came later. And there was a great library in a town in Egypt called Alexandria. And Alexandria used to be one of the greatest seats of learning the world has ever known. And one of the great tragedies of history is that the library at Alexandria was burned. And there's just no telling what a wealth of information about ancient civilizations that was lost to history when that Alexandrian library was burned. So when you're doing textual work in the Old Testament, you come across things about an Alexandria text. There were all kinds of things there that we lost. But I just wanted you to understand, so when we go back now and we look at Nehemiah chapter 4, the people who are against the work of Nehemiah in this day are the very same people who are against the work of Israel today. The Palestinians, the Arabs, okay, and the Jordanians. Now, Jordan has a kind of a cold peace right now with Israel, but they still are not at peace. So let's go back now and look at our outline. Oop. I don't know what to do with it. There we go. The opposition and ridicule, and then opposition by plot. So first they start yelling at them in chapter 4. That doesn't work. And then they try to assassinate, basically. So he built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height. That's chapter 4, verse 6. That's the most famous, probably, verse in all of Nehemiah. Because the people had a mind to work. So you've got that great verse. And then look at the very next thing. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed. In other words, it's starting now to be a wall. The gate still hadn't been put up, but we're now getting to where everything's connected and it's actually going to be problematic to ride a horse and jump the wall. So they all plotted, they became very angry, and they all plotted together to come fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. Now look at verse 9. We want to apply this to Christian work today. And we pray to our God and set a guard as a protection against them day and night. So we see here a combination of prayer and works. They don't just pray. they set a guard. So they do both. But they prayed first. Prayer has the preeminence. Mm-hmm. In Judah it was said, the strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves we will not be able to rebuild the wall. And our enemies said, they will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. At that time the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us, 10 times you must return to us. So in other words, the word of the plot got to them. And they come report to him 10 different ways. He gets this word. And as a result then, I stationed the people by their clans with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. So Nehemiah handles this. So you have the opposition coming by plot. He gets word of it. They prayed about it already. And he positions everyone. And now he encourages them. Don't be afraid. Instead of being afraid of the enemy, he's pointing them to the greatness of our God, the faithfulness of our God. And think about it. How often do we focus not on God, but on our enemy? And we can focus too much on the enemy and too little on God. And a great example of that, what would be the greatest example of that in the Old Testament you can think of? When Israel focused too much on their enemy and too little on God. There are a lot of them. What? Going to the Promised Land. That's a great example. Sent out 12 spies. 10 came back and said what? There are giants in the land. And 2 came back and said, yeah, and there are big grapes too. Right? Okay, what are some other examples? Because the Old Testament is just full of them. Think of another one. My first thought was David and Goliath. All the armies of Israel are there, and there's this big giant, and they're afraid of him. They're all focused on him. You know, and the wonderful, you know, everybody says the giant's too big to fight, and David sees him and says he's too big to miss. But we can think of so many of those examples. Moses, the people of Egypt, they're in bondage in Egypt. He brings them out and they murmur. They want to go back to Egypt, remember? So just you can find example after example after example, and I think we could talk about that in our own day. Anytime there's a great work of God, there's going to be a great opposition to it. And if it's going to succeed, the people are going to focus on God instead of the opposer. And if it succeeds, the people are going to be prayerful and they're going to have a mind to work. It's a twofer. It's both and, not an either or. But prayer should come first. And I really think you and I are living in that kind of time in America. There's going to be great opposition. We have yet to begin to see what kind of opposition is going to be against the church. Because it's not hard to oppose the church now because the church isn't doing a whole lot. If we begin to do something, then we will really be opposed.
One of the things I thought about, I see these pictures of in New York City, the
Islamic Muslims, right,
are doing their demonstrations and they're blocking the streets and the sidewalks and bound down to the
community. Right.
And then if we Christians went to put on something like that, we'd be
arrested. And those are the kinds of things I think in the future you're going to see change. Opposition is growing, and I think it's because of God's sovereign plan. Things are beginning to be put in place. I don't know if... I don't have TV, but that doesn't mean I don't get news. David Cameron, the Prime Minister in Britain, gave a speech in Europe a couple of weeks ago or last week. My wife's not here to tell me when, so sometime in the recent past, okay? And he was talking about all the different groups in Europe and the failure of what he called multiculturalism. Okay? Well, that's going to come here, and it's going to be probably one of the things God uses to bring and to begin the process that will come. Because there's got to be this great strain, this great opposition that will arise in the last days. And if we're not living in the last days, I don't know when we're living. So, but you see how to deal with it. Nehemiah didn't let it get him. And the thing that bothers me the most probably about this is it's one thing to fight people who are outside the wall. Now let's look to chapter 5. He's also got to fight folks who are in the wall. That's the problem. And in the church, that has been a huge issue for us. So, first, chapter 5, the extortion that's occurring, the charging of interest. Now, let me just go on record. I am a radical. I would love to see, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm against them both, okay? I just want you to know that up front. We talk about our capitalist system, and interest is something that we all have paid and charged. And if you read the New Testament or the Old Testament, there was an interest charge. The usury is talked about in the Old Testament. It's a sin. And I think it's a sin that America is guilty of. I don't know if you've ever had a Sears card, but them folks at Sears is serious about their interest, right? 22, 23, 24. I read something the other day just to see. I think it was Apple. One of the guys in our church is talking about getting an Apple computer, and he was going to buy it on credit from Apple. So I got online to read the fine print for him. And the fine print said that had he missed a payment, they could charge him up to 31% interest. Now, folks, that's usury. The Bible's against that. And whether you're Democrat or Republican, shouldn't matter. That's wrong. And so look at this. Chapter 5, verse 1. Now there arose a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, with our sons and our daughters we are many, so let us get grain, that we may eat and keep alive. They were also those who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses to get grain because of the famine. And there were those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. Now our flesh is as the flesh of our brothers, our children are as their children, yet we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but it is not in our power to help it, for other men have our fields and our vineyards. Now, America has a soft slavery. No bumper sticker. I owe, I owe, I owe, so off to work I go. We don't sell people into bondage, yet people are sold into bondage. And they're in bondage to debt. And as a result of that, people can't help other folks in their family because they're in bondage to debt. And the church is as guilty of this as these people were. There are folks in our churches who own mortgage companies and who work at banks and who are part of this whole system. And we all do it. And if you really get serious about what needs to happen in America and in the church, it's uncomfortable to think about how our society needs to be turned upside down. My mother worked at a bank. It's terrible. You shouldn't charge interest to a brother. That's what the Bible says. Now, I want you to know, I've never been given anything in my life. Nobody in my family had anything. I've paid interest, and my dad, he got a $13,500 mortgage to build a house that he and my mother lived in. And I did the math, and he paid over $300,000 to the federal government in 30 years to pay for that $13,500 house. That's the American way. Now, you tell me how that's right. 30-year mortgage, you do it. If you've got one, if you've paid off one. And he thought he was doing great because he only had to pay $92 and so many cents a month. Yeah, exactly. But one of the things that Islam has that Christianity is, as is practiced in America, doesn't. They don't do this. They don't participate in our banking system. They have laws that they go by, Sharia law. They don't really borrow money. Now, they have some ways they get around it to make money. But as I understand Sharia law, and I haven't studied it thoroughly, but they can't charge each other interest. So what they do to get around it is they agree to buy so much oil from you, and in response to that, in the contract, you then agree to turn around later at a later date and buy so much oil plus so much more from them, and there's the interest, there's the profit, that extra. Because by Sharia law, they can't charge interest. And by Old Testament law, you couldn't charge interest. And we're guilty. And it's not the government, I mean, we're guilty. The church is guilty. I'm so excited. Our church, Emerson, we're going to pay off our debt in the next, this is February. So when Dale writes a check in March, our church treasurer, our debt at our church is paid for. And so many churches can't say that. We violate things. And so there are issues here. Now, I wish I were out of debt. I'm not. Would love to be. But this is an issue. And so if you're going to teach Nehemiah, you're going to look at this, you've got to think about it. And so Nehemiah, he rebukes the creditors. Now, if he did this today, Glenn Beck would say he's something bad. Right? I mean, we've got some things messed up in our culture. So look what he says. I like this part because this tells me that there may be a hope for me. Chapter 5, verse 6 is one of my favorite verses in Nehemiah. I was very angry when I heard their outcry in these words. You ever get mad? It's okay. Nehemiah got mad and he did something about it. He didn't just get mad. He did something about it. I took counsel with myself. Now, I love that. You ever take counsel with yourself? Verse 7, the first phrase. That's bad. Yeah. I was very angry when I heard the outcry with these words, and I took counsel with myself. And I brought charges against the nobles and the officials, and I said to them, "You are exacting interest each from his brother." And I held a great assembly against them. We would call that today a protest. He organized a protest against the bankers. I don't doubt that. No, I'm not aware of it, but they...
They charged me, and I went down and asked them, and they said, "Well, if you've got direct deposit, you don't have to pay it." Well, I've had direct deposit for 25 years, so why are you down?
They are doing everything they can to charge everything they can, any way they can. Yeah. Bank of America is a terrible bank. And, of course, all of us who have had banks, you know, your bank got sold, and somebody else bought it, and somebody else bought it. Now, there are too few banks.
It's even worse than that. Because I can face it. About 15 years ago, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Levi Strauss, were giving me a book out because they wouldn't let homosexuals be.
Really?
Years, and I'm stuck with it.
Wells Fargo because they just bought your bank. Yeah. 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 Well, our church, that's who we'll be paying our last payment to, Wells Fargo. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the problem when you think about it. So much of finance today in America, that's one of the reasons why I do my business with the annuity board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Even though I could get a little better return on my retirement if I did it elsewhere, because I know that they're studying and they're only going to invest in companies that are doing godly business as opposed to companies that are doing just business. Steve Jobs of Apple, and this pains me because Apple's a great computer. They're a great company. He's a practicing Hindu. And he's the one who's against the Manhattan Declaration because he says it's a hate speech. We were guilty of hate speech, and he won't let us have an Apple app. And I know, Lee, you have an iPhone. It's going to get increasingly difficult for us to do that. But you never know if the company that you're invested in has a subsidiary that owns something like Playboy. I mean, it's just so many different things that are happening, and it's really hard, particularly banks, because they've got their hands into so many places. No, they don't. Yeah, they don't know. They really don't know. Yeah. Yeah. But Nehemiah rebuked the creditors, and I tell you, I like that. It resonates with me. I would like to rebuke some creditors and some bankers as well. But then notice the offenders then do something strange to us. Look at this, chapter 5, verse 12. Then they said, and the they here, these are the creditors. We will restore these and require nothing from them. We will do as you say. And I called the priest and made them swear to do as they had promised. So he didn't trust the bankers. He makes them swear to the priest in front of the priest. So in other words, we're going to you're going to swear on a Bible. We're going to make sure that you're going to do this. Verse 13, I also shook out the fold of my garment to make the point and said, so may God shake out every man from his house, from his labor, who does not keep this promise. So may he be shaken out and emptied. And all the assembly said, amen. And praise the Lord, and all the people did as they had promised. Now, I don't know about you, but that's the kind of assembly that America needs. We need to get our money. God's going to hold us accountable. And as an American citizen, where our money is spent, you know, it's sent all over the world to do who knows what. And we fight against money being spent, federal money being spent for abortion. Federal money being spent for all kinds of things. Just think about how good old-fashioned U.S. dollars have been spent over the course of our lifetimes in the world. We just saw this past week Egypt. 30 years of our money went to prop up that guy. It's just no telling. So when you start thinking about the chickens that America has to come home to roost, it's going to be a big tree full. We've got a lot of judgment coming. But then lastly, let's look at Nehemiah's unselfish leadership. He doesn't take money that he could have. Verse 14, moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, and from the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allowance of the governor. So Nehemiah is the governor of this territory appointed by the king for 12 years. And it'd be like our governor of Georgia serving three terms and not taking a salary. I grew up in Alabama and Georgia. I don't ever remember of a governor, even the so-called Jimmy Carter, that didn't take a salary. And there was a governor in Alabama named Jim Folsom, Big Jim Folsom. And he basically ran on the campaign that he was going to steal all he could and he'd get it for you too. They elected him, almost elected his son governor, but Big Jim Folsom. That's when the road, the first road in Cherokee County where my granddaddy's farm was, got paved, was during the administration of Big Jim Folsom. Because he told my granddaddy he'd get the road paved. And he did. Probably at twice the cost, but he got it paid. But you know, think about all these things in America. This is righteousness. This is the kind of government when the Bible talks about in Micah, let justice roll like a river. This is the kind of thing that we tell ourselves stories about. Honest Abe, you know, George Washington wouldn't tell a lie. All those kinds of things we have created myths about. But this guy really did it. And that's the kind of government we need. And we just don't have it. Yeah. Right, and we have politicians. He goes on to say, the former governor, verse 15, who were before me, laid heavy burdens on the people and took from them for their daily ration 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants lorded it over the people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. So we need some politicians and some statesmen and some government officials who fear God. In this day, taxes kind of work a little differently. You basically, as a official for the government, you had to give to the king a certain amount. And you had a license from him, basically, to tax at whatever rate you wanted to, as long as you gave him that amount. And you see this in the New Testament, Jeff, as you study the idea of the tax collector, the publican, the tax collectors. Matthew was one. They're so hated because they would steal so much from the people. Because they didn't just, it'd be like the IRS man coming to you, and in addition to you paying what Uncle Sam says you owed, then you had to pay him whatever he could get out of you. So he had basically a license to steal. And that's how this was. All right, it is time for us to break. Does anybody have a question? Anything about Nehemiah? Yes.